Love between humans is just not easy. And without great examples or education about emotions, communication, sex, and what keeps love alive, it's too easy to be disheartened, settle, or give up on what you want most. I believe you can have the love and intimacy you want. And having coached thousands of people on their love lives for over 20 years, I know what love can be for you. So I'm bringing you people who share vulnerably about their dating and relationship struggles and how they learn to create the most connected, fulfilling, and exciting love and sex of their lives. So you can have it too. Hello and welcome to this episode of Practicing Love. Have the best love and sex of your life after 40. I'm your host, Shayna James. And this is a special treat for me to be here with Dr. Jed Diamond. Jed, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
And Dr. Jed is an incredible human who has been marriage and family therapist for, is it over 50 years at this point?
Over 50 years, indeed.
Over 50 years. You've written, I think, at least 16 books, including The Enlightened Marriage, The Five Transformational Stages of Relationship and Why the Best is Yet to Come. You've also written about male menopause, healing the father wound, so many incredible books and wisdom that you have to share with the world. Men Alive, you know, your platform, you're constantly writing. And so I feel grateful that you are here and, you know, that we get to have you. And I also feel grateful that you've always been forthcoming with things that are vulnerable. So on your website, you say the twice divorced.
Confessions of a twice divorced marriage counselor.
There we go. Confessions of a twice divorced marriage counselor. So as we start and dive in, can you give us a little bit of history of, you know, your relational life to this point?
Sure. It continues on. So
yes.
Like many people, I got married fairly early on. I was a woman I had met and fell in love with in college. And we talked about getting married and did and had a child that we hoped to have. And then we adopted a little daughter that we had planned to do. So all of that went well. But like a lot of first marriages, we ran into, you know, the challenges of life and the marriage broke up after 10 years. Okay. And I had kind of a rebound second marriage, which again is not too unusual, that fairly quickly I fell in love again and again had a second marriage that did not go well and had a lot of conflict in it. And we eventually got divorced. And mm-hmm. then, you know, as a marriage and family counselor at the time, I had to say, geez, you know, maybe, you know, I'm telling other people how to do it and it isn't working for me. And so I really stepped back and really did some hard looking, did some therapy myself, yeah. and did some hard reflecting and felt like I got some things together. And then fell in love, met Carlin, who's my present wife, and we've been together now for 44 years.
Amazing.
And we continue to go through various changes as we've gotten together and continued our life and shared. Yeah. She brought three children into the marriage. We raised two of our younger children together. So, you know, wow. blended families and a lot of challenges that brings in a relationship.
Wow. Amazing. And how many grandchildren do you now have?
We now have 17 grandchildren and three great-grandchildren fourth on the way. So lots of family and extended family and relationships that continue to change.
So beautiful. Thank you for being so inspiring. And I know that one of the things that Carlin has said to you over the years that we've talked about is that you've been married for 44 years and you've been in a men's circle, was it for 45 years now?
Yeah, exactly. That was one of the things that I did. Maybe I better get myself together and my men self together. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I've been in a men's group that's been continuing to meet now for 45 years.
Wow.
And Carlin has voiced that one of the primary reasons she felt that we've had a successful 44-year marriage is that I've been in a men's group that continues to meet for 45 years. Yeah. And she's been in a number of women's groups as well. So we feel that supporting our group identity as men, separate from women and women for Carlin, has really enabled us to, I think, one of the many reasons that I think we've continued to have a great marriage.
Yeah, I mean, especially in this day and age when we are having this, you know, crisis of loneliness and fewer and fewer real live interactions with people, to have a steady place where you can go and feel safe to share, you know, the ideal men's group, which I know that you are part of, right, is one where people actually talk about the real things and the struggles. Yeah. And I've heard from one man who recently went to his first men's group where he was like, you know, just that sense of not feeling alone and getting to say things and have someone else say me too, or hearing something else and me too. And I've had that in women's groups as well. And, you know, these days, I don't think it necessarily has to be gendered, but there is something powerful as well about, you know, feeling the same or feeling safe in that way.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Okay. So anything else you want to say about your current marriage before we dive into a struggle that you've had?
Well, yeah, I'll say a couple of things. One of the things that Carlin and I recognized early on, and we were, you know, getting into midlife when we got together. I was just shy of 40. She was, you know, a few years older than 40. And one of the things we recognized was that we change, you know, and looking back at our previous marriages, Carlin had been married twice before as well. Yeah. And we realized that we're different people. And the idea of saying the same vows when you get married that you think are going to last forever, but you change as a person. So we decided early on that we would look at our marriage every 15 years and make basically a decision. You know, who are we now? What would we want to say? Do we want to stay married? If so, let's see what our vows would be. So we did that, and we've now, you know, we got married, as I said then, had a 15-year remarriage ceremony, a 30-year remarriage ceremony. Ooh. And next year will be 45.
I was going to say, you're coming up on 45.
Exactly. So we're already, you know, kind of thinking about, okay, where, what do we want to do? And we've had various places where we've gotten remarried and ceremonial, who we're inviting. So that's, I think, one of the recognitions that it didn't eliminate all our, you know, problems that, you know, inevitably relationships have, and we'll talk some about that, but it certainly was a recognition that helped us recognize that we change, and that the idea of having a long-term marriage, now that we're living longer, we really need to acknowledge the changes that we go through and recognize how that impacts our relationships.
It brings tears to my eyes. There's something about, you know, being willing to be so honest, and that question of, okay, do we still want to do this? Who are we now? What do we, you know, want to create together? Who do we want to be for each other? Oftentimes that really does sort of die in the wedding process, right? Or, you know, it's said once and then, you know, it's kind of there in the background sometimes, but most often couples are not really looking at those vows again.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Okay. So what would you say, you know, what's one of the struggles that you've been going through that you're currently practicing with?
Yeah. So, you know, there's obviously in a long-term relationship, there have been numerous struggles. Early on, there was the, how do we keep a relationship going when we're trying to raise children together and having time for ourselves as a couple, and often kind of losing our sense of self as we, you know, each were very involved in work and careers and then family and changes. most people, no. So there's been that, finding that kind of time early on. And the things that we've been dealing with, you know, post-40, which is most of our relationship together. As you know, I'm 81, or will be 81 in December, and Carlin is 86. So we continue to work on our relationship, and probably the biggest shift was fairly recently for us, and has been a real challenge, which I'll get into a little more, which was it's been now 18 months ago. Carlin was always been very active. She was out for a walk in the neighborhood, and I got a call on cell phone saying, "I've fallen, help." And where she was. And fortunately, she was close by. I knew where she was from where she told me. I got there, and she had fallen on the sidewalk. There was some wet sidewalk at the time in March, so it was a little bit damp. And as it turned out, got her to the emergency room with some help. She had a broken hip that needed surgery fairly quickly. And then during the surgery, she had a stroke. So our life literally changed again. It changed numerous times through, but this one was a biggie. So we went from two very independent people who'd been doing our lives, you know, and kind of used to it, really still in love after all these years. And then all of a sudden, she wakes up from surgery, I'm with her, and she can't talk.
Oh, my gosh.
So not only is, you know, the emergency physical, but she can't even speak.
Wow.
And then they tell you, because hospitals don't keep people even after major surgery, you know, she has 2 days in the hospital. I said, okay, we're sending her home.
Oh, my God.
And we have our bedrooms are upstairs, and so she can't.
She couldn't get up there.
Upstairs at that point. So I had to get a bed. And the long and short of it is that we've gone from a world of, I characterize it as, we were partners, lovers, friends, all of those great things that we finally achieved.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's different.
Yeah.
And she fortunately has gotten better with her speech, and she's able to articulate more, but there's still some deficits.
Yeah.
She went from being independent to now I do more and more caregiving, which is wonderful.
But we can get into that too, because it's wonderful, and it's a huge
huge change.
And so, I think one thing I just want to say too is, you know, you're experiencing this in your 80s, and there are people who experience this 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s,
exactly.
Right? And we don't really know how long we have. Like, there are so many, I have three deaths in my sort of distant, you know, circle of people in their 50s in the last couple months. And, you know, people are having heart attacks and strokes, and people suddenly have cancer, and people. So I think I just also want to say for people listening, right, like, yes, this is happening to you, and we can learn the wisdom of what could happen in the later years, but it could also happen tomorrow.
Exactly.
And to learn, like you're saying, wow, what do we do when that dynamic shifts, and how do we stay connected, and how do we stay loving when your life turns upside down?
Exactly. Well, I see it, you know, as you know, I've got six grown children who are, you know, in their 50s. So they're having some of those same problems that we have. So you're right. It isn't reserved for 80. It just happens that this is when it happened for us.
And sometimes it's a loss of a job, or it's
exactly.
It can be all these different things, or the, you know, the parent of one of the partners needs to be cared for, or the kid goes through some big ordeal, or
And I'd add on to it that there then are these big life changes that our personal lives are embedded in a larger world, which we all were embedded in with COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Because when COVID hit, that changed our dynamics with our family, our kids and their schools, and our grandkids, and our adult lives, our relationship lives, our health. You know, I had health challenges because I have lung issues. And so the idea of being more vulnerable. So all of these changes impact a relationship. And that's been a both a struggle and a great gift. And I want to, you know, talk about kind of both sides of that. Yeah.
Yeah, because, right, I mean, I'm excited to hear from you about the struggle that leads to the gift, because it takes a lot of maturity, I think. You know, sometimes when we get into relationship when we're younger, it's like there's a sense of, oh, I'm in this for the goodies, right? I'm in this for the passion, or I'm in this for the play that we get to have together, or, you know, we're going to have a family. And then the reality of, like you said, those different phases of relationship sets in. And I love that your book has part of the subtitle, why the best is yet to come, because I've seen you walk through some of this in a in such a graceful and connected way.
Yeah. Well, let me just say a little bit of, about kind of what I learned from the book, because that was an earlier both part of our lives, and it was geared towards younger families, but mostly men and women and relationships in 40s and older. And what I talked about with these five stages that most of us, and this was me certainly, and Carlin early on, we kind of thought of that there were three stages that were, first you fall in love, you know, find the right person, fall in love, and then build a life together. That's step number two. And then we live happily ever after. You know, if you get the right person and you, you know, you build your life, you have the good life, and then that's all downhill from there. And then it turned out, certainly two marriages for us didn't work out. And so in the book, I said there's a third stage, and it isn't living happily ever after. That comes later if you're lucky. But the third stage I call disillusionment, which is can happen for all kinds of reasons, that it just seems like who you were is different. This person that you had all these qualities that you loved, and they were so nice when you first met each other, and little quirks that, ooh, it's so cute, later drive you nuts, right? And, you know, and sometimes to a point where this, I don't know if I want to go on like this. So disillusionment, I found, is both a stage of relationship, because in many ways we, early on, we create an illusion of that perfect partner that isn't real. And so part of stage three is really reclaiming who we really are and beyond the illusions and the realities of people who change and have problems. And then luckily there's, if you get through that, is a stage four I call real lasting love. And then even a stage five of what happens when your real lasting love then gets rebirthed over, as we did, 15-year remarriages. But the challenge, and I'll just start into this, but for us, right now, I'll tell you what it is for me, and Carlin would have to tell you, I think there's some similarities from her side, but it feels like I used to have a lover that I knew really well, who we really worked well together, and that lover is no longer there, that there's this new person, and it's almost like an old love has died, you know, which was an independent person, did all these things, we traveled, we did this, and now that person is needs help, needs support, needs to be, you know, retired from a lot of the work she used to do, a lot of the activities and work that was part of her part of the marriage, doing the bookkeeping, paying the bills, taking care of the house, making the meals, buying the food. Now, increasingly, I'm doing that. But then I found I've got this new lover. And it's this new lover is mysterious. She doesn't talk as much. And so there's more of that nonverbal kind of connection that you often have early in a relationship where you don't have to say much. You just look in each other's eyes and you start to giggle. Or you start to cry because you feel the pain, or you just reach out and you touch. So I have this mysterious new lover that I'm just getting to know. And I'm realizing there's a new me that has to emerge that needs to listen more.
Yes.
Needs to see the subtleties in relationship. But also in our case, because we're older, we're living at a time where it could end any time. Yes. And as you point out, that can happen anytime. It could happen to young marriages and young people. It can happen when you're, 30 or 40 or 50. Yeah. So there's this really interesting dynamic of huge challenge and huge having to be hugely sensitive to each other,
yes.
to have a sense of humor,
yeah.
to be able to have patience, but also an opportunity, in a sense, to have a new lover with the same person that you have gotten to know.
Yeah, I think that is that's basically the reason why I say that after 40, there is the opportunity for the best love and sex of your life, right? And there are all of these challenges, but if we actually meet the challenges, like you said, with that kind of curiosity and slowing down and paying more attention to the subtleties and what is happening non-verbally and what's happening energetically between us, it's such a more nuanced and multifaceted way to relate to each other that there's so much more possible. Like you said, it's this new opportunity to know yourself again, or maybe not again, but to rediscover yourself.
Exactly.
And to rediscover her, and who are we together now? And I feel like that never ends if you're willing to live that way.
Exactly. And that really requires that we hang in there at times when we're challenged. It means reaching out for support. I mean, that I learned early on, having a men's group that I could really talk deeply to, that we don't normally do, particularly men. I know, women and men have a lot of similar challenges, but also some different ones. I've found men as a group, not all men, but as a group, often have a more difficult time sharing feelings, opening up, being vulnerable, being able to ask for help.
Yeah.
Those are all things that I have had to learn to do, and it's really paid off now as I've gotten older, because to carry all of this and continue my work in the world, which I do and I'm excited about, and to try and do new things, to have more connections, I've had to stay in therapy myself, so I continue. I have a therapist that I've seen for years that I reconnected with. I get massages regularly because I need physical touch. I walk every day because I need time by myself to be out in nature. I find ways to take care of a lot, but I can
also
only do that when I realize I'm part of a larger community, that I need to be able to ask for help. And again, many of us have trouble doing that, but we need to, and it pays off.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you are getting that help, and that, that is something I think all people struggle with. I think there's a particular way men struggle with asking for help, and then there's also this, generation of women, these strong, independent, I'm Wonder Woman, I can power through, I don't need anything, it's definitely one of the things that I navigate as well. Like, I know how to do things on my own and take care of myself and go through hard times, but the fact that somebody else would be there with me while I'm doing that, that's just like, it's a hard one sometimes to be with.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Carla and I both find, because she was very independent, still is. She still does things, has to really find that there's a new person that has to get support as our life changes. And often that very aggressive, independent, I can do it on my own, she had to accept, no, there's things I can't do, and I need you.
She
needs me in new ways. And I can feel needed in ways that I haven't before, because I've always picked really strong, independent women to be partnered with, which has been great. I love strong, independent women. As I'm a strong, independent man. But I also recognize that there are times we need to allow ourselves to be dependent and interdependent and be open to being held and nurtured. And Carl and I, you know, kind of joke, an inside joke, but I even appreciate it. So sometimes she feels guilty that I'm doing a whole lot more work now than she does, and she's not doing as much as she used to. And so our little inside joke, which is kind of reversing, she's 5.5 years older than I am. So the little inside joke is that I said, well, you know, during those first 5.5 years when you were in the world and you were working hard, because she had a lot of challenges in her family, had a very, you know, dysfunctional family. She had to go through a whole lot. I was in the world of whatever, make-believe or the
fantasy, pre-birth. Imaginary play.
The imaginary pre-birth world.
Oh, right, you weren't even born.
I wasn't born, exactly. 5.5 years before I was born, I just could relax. I was in, you know, in heaven or wherever, you know, we are
floating
before
in
you're
space
born.
Or wherever, right.
And so the joke is that now I owe her 5.5 years of, okay, now it's my turn to do the hard work while you can kick back and relax and be in just, you know, the world of accepting and the world of spirit and the world of I don't have to do so much. So it's a fun time.
Yeah, it's beautiful that you're seeing it this way and that, you know, we get to choose our view, our perspective, right? And so you could see it in a very different way that makes it harder and, you know, build more resentment, but you're seeing it in a way, right? This, I would call this a practice. There's a practice of seeing what is the opportunity here and how can we love each other better and how can we find humor in this and how can we be humble, right? All of these are practices. How can we ask for help when it feels challenging or allow ourselves to have needs when we've been a strong, independent person? And not to say now you're not a strong, independent person. How do we expand maybe our definition of what a strong, independent person is?
Well, it's interesting you use the word practice. That strikes a chord with me on a number of levels. One was where Carlin and I met was at the Aikido dojo in Mill Valley in Marin County. She had been living in Oregon. She was traveling in California. I lived in California, and I had been practicing Aikido for a while, which, if you don't know, is a very interesting nonviolent martial art.
Yeah.
And Carlin had also been practicing in Oregon, where she lived. And we met at this dojo she was traveling and visited. And so we've had this idea of a practice. You know, whether it's a martial art practice or any kind of practice, whether you practice yoga or meditation or anything that you do, regardless of whether it's paying off. I think we have so many things we do that we want the payoff. We want the goodies, as you said earlier, you know, when you're in love, you want all those goodies, which is wonderful, and we should have lots of goodies. But to get those goodies, I think we need practices, and we need practices that you keep practicing. And so a lot of the clients that I have, I try to share my practices or things that they can choose from to help their relationships when they're, in a sense, my children's age, sometimes grandchildren's age of earlier on in relationship. And 40 and older, I think, is an opportunity for new things for everybody, you know, midlife and it's, you know, traditionally a time of rebirth.
Yep.
And because we're living longer, we got a lot of time ahead if we take care of ourselves and our relationships can grow and thrive. But having practice and being willing to continue to practice and realize no matter what's going on, we can practice and it can deepen and it can get better and more rich.
Yes. Yes, and one of the things I love about practice is we're not supposed to be perfect when we're practicing. It's a way of holding what we're doing such that, you know, we can take risks and be courageous and see what's possible as opposed to, you know, if we're in a tournament or we're competing, we're supposed to get it right. And that's the time where we're supposed to show up as our best. And, you know, this is another way of showing up as our best, but not showing up to try to, I don't know, meet some specific idealized version of ourselves, right? There's more compassion when I consider it a practice. Yes. For myself and for another.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a practice that goes on. And I mean, part of enjoying a long life is to be able to have practices that continue and to see your partner as new and interesting and a bit of a mystery, because we are. But often we get into old ruts of just, oh, well, I know your stories. I know your stuff. I know who you are. And there's a comfort in familiarity. You know, there's that side which we very much know and enjoy. You know, oh, yeah, we have in jokes. We have things we've worked out. We've gone through things. We have children. We have grandchildren. We have stories to tell. But it's nice to also be with a new lover, you know, who you don't know.
Yeah.
And you don't know what to expect. And you need to see how the practice unfolds into something new. And we're in a new world. I mean, let's face it, you know, the world is changing all the time. And yep. Some of it is very challenging and some of it's very deep and interesting and beautiful. And we all are in this together. We're humanity still trying to figure out, you know, what does it mean to be on this this planet Earth that we all inhabit with the other creatures? And that's a practice in and of itself.
Yes, yes. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I've always had this theory that if we actually wake up each morning and admit that we don't fully know our partners, right, that is part of what keeps love alive, because we're in this mystery and we're in this discovery. And to me, it feels like you're validating that theory through your life and through your practice of you know, relationally being in that curiosity and the mystery.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'll just say one thing, you know, with you and your work of honest sex and, you know, what we found, and I'm sure a lot of other people find this at every age, but there's more to sex than sex.
Yes.
And sex and what that means changes as you go through time together and you go through ages together. And, you know, I can tell you, sex takes on a whole different level and expanded level of nuance, you know, as our bodies inevitably change as we get older. And yet there's a, you know, a fluidity and a dance that you do that is an intertwining of energies that is very sensual, deeply, you know, moving and sexual in new and exciting ways. And so I just want to add that dimension into relationships that change and what that means to be with a partner. Because, you know, there's a dimensionality of intimacy that we can have with ourselves and our inner, you know, being. But there is also something that you can only get from a partnership with another person.
I love that. Thank you for saying that and for speaking to that. You know, even for me, no matter what the age, we can expand the definition of sex to include our, you know, our emotions, our energy, our whatever we want to call it, right? The spirit bodies, our souls. And again, have you speak to, all right, you know, you're in your 80s and there is this new, or continues to be, new levels and new dimensions and new intertwinings, and so beautiful. And I was joking with my partner the other day. We were talking about, he heard an article, a podcast or something about, you know, someone having sex in their 90s and how in retirement homes there can often be a lot of sex happening. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to be at that age. But what I do know is that what you just said, right, the energetic, the entwining, the intimacy, I don't know what's going to be happening with my body or how it's going to work, but that doesn't mean we can't have sex.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a very heartening thing, for I think, for all of us, because I think at whatever age, we worry about loss and we worry about loss of a partner. Are they going to be different? Are they going to die? Are they going to leave me? I mean, that's a part of. But we also are concerned about, is some part of me going to die? Some right. part of me going to be not able, not functional?
Not functional. And, mm-hmm.
Yeah, the truth is, like all living things, we wear out. We get tired. No things live forever, and we wouldn't want to. And yet, as something ends, something new can begin. Mm. And I constantly feel that in my own life. I teach it to the clients that come to me and that read the books and interact with me, and my own children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. And I feel it every day in my own life.
Mm. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here and having this conversation and being an incredible inspiration for me and so many people out in the world. I deeply appreciate you.
Likewise. It's been a joy talking to you as always.
Thank you. And where can people find more of your work?
Well, probably the easiest way is my website, which is menalive.com. Simple, menalive.com. And I have a free newsletter that I send out to anybody that would like to subscribe with a new article and ways to connect with the work that I do in the world. So menalive.com, that's my window to the world.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I'm so glad you joined us for today's episode of Practicing Love. I hope you enjoyed our conversation and gained insight into yourself and your current and past relationships and inspiration for what's possible. If you like what you heard, I'd be so grateful for you to subscribe and write a quick review to help people find us. If you'd like more support in your love life, be sure to get your free copy of my best-selling book, Honest Sex, at shanajamescoaching.com/free. That's shanajamescoaching.com/free. And we'll see you next time.